You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If the Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Rodgers will go conventional. He'll do it himself. Touchdown, Packers. Aaron Rodgers into the end zone.
You're listening to the best Packer radio show on the internet.
Cheesehead Radio.
Reach the eye.
Get those back.
So they tried to address the problem, but so far, like you said, nothing.
I guess the bright side is it happened early enough on that there's time.
What are you talking about? We're going to talk about the pass rush. You can't talk about what's not there.
If we don't start pushing that pocket back and getting some pass rush, we're going to tear the secondary.
Seats in the bowl at Lambeau will definitely outweigh the demand for seats.
All right, Green Bay Packer fans, welcome back to another episode of Cheesehead Radio right here on the Packers Talk Network. I'm joined tonight by my fellow co-host Jersey Al Bracco as we bring you not quite as exciting and happy of a show, maybe a little more introspective, a little more mystery in this one. What went on with the Green Bay Packers on Sunday when they were handily defeated by the Denver Broncos? We will be talking live tonight with the Green Bay Press Gazette's Wes Hodkowitz. You can listen for that a little bit later on in the show. But right now, it's me and Al going live with you. I'd like to throw out a quick thank you to our sponsors, Mayfield Sports Marketing over at Mayfield Sport on Twitter. And, of course, Waukesha Sports Cards. They're at Walk Sports over there. It's going to be a good show. We're missing John Rahor and Jamie Snowden tonight. Hopefully they will be back. Possibility John might even join us a little bit later in the show. But for right now, we're going to kick it off with this week's Packers news.
Jersey Al and Jamie bring you this week's Packers news.
Well, the Packers are undefeated no more. As Mike McCarthy so eloquently stated after the game, they got their asses handed to them in every which way, shape, and form by the high-flying Broncos, in turn making the Packers look like they were just plain high.
Now, both teams were coming off their bye weeks, yet it became apparent early on that only one team made a conscious effort to change their usual offensive game plan and style of play for this game. That team, not the Green Bay Packers.
Am I putting words in your mouth there, CD?
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Denver went to a, well, I do get to write it, so I guess you have to read my opinions when you read them. But
yeah, I would.
Anyway, Denver went to a quick passing game to lessen pressure on Manning and showed the Packers some things they certainly never saw on film from the Broncos. For example, on at least two plays, Manning took off on a planned rollout. If that isn't an unscouted look, I don't know what is. Denver's adjustments helped Manning throw for 340 yards against the Packers.
Meanwhile, the Packers seemingly changed little, despite knowing they would be going up against the best defense in the league. Now, Denver's top-notch press coverage corners, fierce pass rushers, evidently did not cause the Packers great concern. Green Bay's lack of adjustments led to a 77-yard passing day for last year's league MVP, Aaron Rodgers.
But moving on from that game, the Packers find themselves heading down to Carolina to face a surprising 7-0 Panthers. If the Packers' goal is to make the playoffs and secure home field throughout, this suddenly becomes a must game in early November. A loss here would put them three games behind the Panthers for home field, including the tiebreaker. That would be a huge deficit to overcome in only half a season. And that was the latest Packers news. Next up is Gems from the Packers Twitterverse.
This week's Gems from the Packers Twitterverse.
The reaction to the Packers' dismantling was pretty predictable, with lots of angry tweets, insults, and, naturally, calls for firings. Rather than focus on those a little bit too easy, we dug for a few different takes on the game. And the first comes from our old friend, Packer Ranter, who said, quote, "Fully expect Tim Mastay to show up on the injury report this week with a fatigue."
Like a knee or a shoulder, a fatigue. A Twitter account, I almost took the out because I didn't get it at first, but then I realized what he was saying. A Twitter account called Wisconsin Problems went straight to the point. Quote, "That awkward moment when you embarrass yourself in front of the whole country, hashtag Packers."
Ouch. Now, Cheesehead TV's Aaron Nagler reminded us of something that happened last year. Quote, "It's like Packers fans didn't see Tom Brady and the Pats get totally taken apart on the road last year and then go on to win the Super Bowl."
And Jeff Ash gave us a much older historical perspective, reminding us of what Vince Lombardi said almost 50 years ago to the day upon losing their first game of the season. "It's a long season, and we're still in first place." And that was your Cheesehead Radio Tweet of the Week.
Cheesehead Radio brings you Make It or Break It.
Sorry about that, Al. You know, just with everything going on, all this uncertainty that I have with the Packers, I need my stings right now just to give me some sense of continuity from week to week. Yeah.
As long as you put them in the right place and you don't put them when people are talking, there's no problem. None at all.
Absolutely. So, as you know,
here we are.
Jersey Al. As you know, I have a bit of a reputation for sometimes tweaking the Packer fan base just a little bit, you know, just to annoy them or get a little reaction.
At it every once in a while.
At times, I do delight in that. And I guess I want to ask you this because this has just been on me here a little bit. Prior to the game, I tweeted a little bit. And I said, you know, if the Packers were due for a loss, this might be the one. You know, it's a non-conference game. Maybe psychologically, they need just a little bit of, get their backs up against the wall because Mike McCarthy's teams tend to do better when there's a little bit of desperation or something to play for. And I mean, I got absolutely hammered. I mean, people were coming down, "No loss is ever good. No, away ye heathen, you're not a true fan."
Got the true fan?
I did, yes. I got that.
All right.
I was a hater too. But that came from Raider. So by the end of the game, suddenly people were singing a different tune. So first question for you, Jersey.
Yeah.
Is this a good loss? Is this something you think that the Packers were progressively getting a little bit less, a little more sloppy week after week? Not quite, but they were still getting some wins, so everyone's like, they're still the class of the NFC. Now all of a sudden, I feel like the Emperor is without his clothes on. You know what I mean? And we're exposed, and now they've got to do something for real.
It's not a good loss. I'm not going to go there. It's not a good loss. It was an awful loss.
Needed loss. Is that
okay? Let me finish, you know.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, good does not enter into the equation at all. It was a horrible, awful, embarrassing loss. The fact that they lost the game after being 6-0 is not the end of the world. They weren't going to go undefeated. Fine. If they had to lose, they lost to another undefeated team. Okay, at least you didn't blow it against the Detroit Lions or something like that. However, good loss? No, that was horrible. It was just horrible. It was like they were not even mentally there to play, and like Denver made all the adjustments, had the perfect game plan, and the Packers were just, well, we'll just roll the ball down. Oh, there's nobody open. I guess we'll take sacks in the second half. No, not a good loss.
And I suppose where I'll actually chime in with you, that makes me nervous, because I do believe, I say that the Packers weren't going to go undefeated. Maybe it's nice for the Packers to have a little adversity now rather than maybe wait till the playoff season to not know how to put it together in the face of adversity. But the way the Packers have reacted is what's creeping me out a little bit. Mike McCarthy shutting down some reporters, getting pretty grumpy, pretty angry. Randall Cobb, you know, there's just a sense of anger and a sense of almost mystification. Yeah, we just sucked. We were terrible. What more do you want me to say? Said Randall Cobb today. I'm not sure the team is reacting the way I would hope they would in this case. They seem to be almost as shell-shocked about Sunday as anyone else.
Well, what would you want them? How would you want them to react? Throw out the usual cliches about, well, you know, just one game, and how would you want them to react? Is it a bad thing that they sound pissed and they're angry and having to answer all these questions?
You know, the anger, I think, is something you need. I think they should. They should be insulted. They should be embarrassed. But I think I've seen other times where McCarthy and the Packers have just said they've just come out with a different resolve, a different way of saying, okay, this is it. I mean, we're going back to the drawing board, but we're going to go fix this. Or how does McCarthy always say it? We got to fix that up. What does he say? He always used to say that. Go back to the drawing board. But it's almost just irritation. It's this anger. Like, they don't have an answer for it. And that's just what makes me a little bit nervous going against the Panthers, is that they're a scrappy team.
Yeah, I think the key here is that they're embarrassed. Hmm. You know, I think that's the difference. I think, I mean, they're professionals. They're prideful professionals. You know, they're embarrassed. They haven't gotten embarrassed in a long time. It's one thing to lose a game. It's another thing to lose the way they did. And, you know, McCarthy's comment after the game tells you how embarrassed he was, you know. He just came right out and said it. And I think that's kind of carrying over during the week, and that's why they hate answering these questions, because they really are embarrassed by how they played. It's one, you know, it's one thing if they played hard and lost, and they might have been angry that they lost the game, but at least they know they gave it a good shot. I don't think they can feel that they gave it a good shot.
I don't think they can. I mean, how many times do we watch a replay, and I'm watching these receivers, and they're jogging. Remember this whole James Jones thing, and, you know, he's the second coming.
They were trying hard.
My goodness, CeeDee Angeli, you were completely wrong. James Jones is the most – the dude was walking. Dude was walking his routes.
By the way, a word of advice.
Yes.
If you're trying to pick up new followers before a Packer game, that mm-hmm. might not be the best way to start out with that tweet.
Which one?
A little word of advice. The one you said about that you felt before the game that this could be the game that they're going to lose, and you got blasted for.
Hey, been dividing Packer fans
probably
since 1999, you know.
But anyway, moving on.
Exactly. Now, I got in a little bit of trouble because Walking Dead was on at the same time, and my wife was a little irritated that we were not going to watch that. The Packer game was on. There was a point where I think I probably could have shut that game off. We could
what
have
was
just
that
said,
point
let's go.
For you?
I don't know. I try to be the person who says, let's stay away from the cliff. Come on. There's a lot of ball game left, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it was about halfway.
All the time nudging people off the cliff, but go ahead.
Yeah. Some of why I like doing that almost, you know, tongue-in-cheek. But it was about halfway through the third quarter where you really kind of saw that they didn't come out. There weren't the halftime adjustments that sometimes you expect from Mike McCarthy in a game where they just seem a little listless in the first half. And to me, just when they came out in that second half and it was just a continuation, you just thought you'd see a whole different team. And you didn't. It was the same team. It might even been a slightly worse team coming out at halftime. And it was to the point where you're like, okay, let's just call the game now, guys. I mean, let's just be done. How about you? When was the game over?
Well, first of all, personally, I don't expect adjustments from McCarthy at halftime. I'm not
really?
On. Yeah, I just don't see it that often. So, to me, he either has a good game plan going in or he doesn't, and he sticks with it either way. That's just my feeling about Mike McCarthy. And people blast me for saying that, but that's okay. That's how I feel.
Well, you're as not far as when your the followers on Twitter, I'll tell you that.
As far as when the game was over for me, I really hung in there until I guess it was early in the fourth quarter and they picked up that safety. And at that point, I didn't turn the TV off. I would never do that. I'm going to watch every second in every game. But mentally, the game was off in my head.
I
was
agree.
There. I was staring at the screen. I was following Twitter. But mentally, the game was over for me at that point.
And that safety, I just got to tell you. I was on Twitter also and looking away. And I was probably finishing a tweet. And I looked up to see the ball rolling on the ground in the end zone. You know, so I missed the first couple seconds of the play in the sack. And I just look, I said, how did this happen? You see the replay a couple times, you're just like, oh, just shut it off now. Holy cow.
Yeah, that was really bad. And as safety goes, it was a pretty embarrassing safety, the way it all came down. You know, everything just
good.
Went wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, Richard Rodgers was not, that probably was not the play he was looking forward to in film study.
Yep, don't think so.
No, not at all. I think one thing that happens, Al, with a game like this, when you have so much going wrong, it just seems like the injuries pile up. And we were so happy having that bye week when we did, because the Packers had gone through several injuries this year, that we're like, okay, we're healthy now. This is great. We're healthy. We're happy. We're expecting this full tilt team to come and play to its potential. And not only did they not, we ended up with a lot more injuries, a lot more that were pretty serious.
They got three key players back, right, after the bye. They got Burnett back, they got Raji back, and they got Devontae Adams back. So you're feeling pretty good, right? Well, like you said, they didn't help. And then we got more guys injured during the game. Now, it seems like we dodged a few bullets, right, during this week. What looked like what could have been much more serious injuries have turned out to not be quite as bad. We have we had Clay Matthews, right, with the ankle. Looked like it was going to be a pretty bad ankle sprain. And here he is. He's already practicing completely in pads, going through all the drills today on Thursday. So looks good that he's going to play. We had Sam Shields with the shoulder. You know, everybody was talking about, collarbone, popped his shoulder out. I think somebody said they saw him in a sling for a few minutes. And we find out afterwards that it's strictly a day-to-day injury. And, you know, he was at practice, wasn't practicing, in pads, just watching, but looks like, again, they dodged a bullet there, and while he may not play this week, he probably will be ready for the following week. Then we had Quinton Rollins. You know, we lose a second cornerback early in the first quarter. He goes out with a neck injury, you know, what seems to be the most prevalent injury among the Packers the last couple of years that other teams don't seem to get are neck injuries. So a lot of concern there. They took him into the locker room. They did x-ray. While everything looked okay, they told him immediately to shower. There's no way you're playing again with a neck injury. You know, they've learned their lessons there, I'm sure. But he's at practice this week, feeling better. You know, they're massaging his neck and doing exercises, and looks like he's going to be okay. So what seemed like potential disaster during the game turned out to not quite be as bad.
Although it sure was a disaster during the game.
Yeah, absolutely, certainly. you lose Shields, right? You lose Rollins. Denver's killing Hayward as an outside
killing
corner.
Killing Casey Hayward.
Killing him. So, you know, and Capers even said, well, the plan, but we would have been playing Hayward at the slot had Shields not got hurt. But obviously we had no choice, you know. And eventually later on, you know, they brought Randall in to play some more outside. But, the damage had been done. And to me, that was a big factor in the game.
Huge.
Just for the fact of the momentum that it gave Denver. It gave them, I thought, and Manning especially, tremendous confidence early in the game, you know. I mean, Manning had been struggling all year. His arm is falling off. He's done. He's finished. He comes in, and suddenly he's hitting Demaryius Thomas all over the field, who's wide open all over the field. He's not getting pressure. He's like, hey, maybe I'm not dead. You know?
Well,
reports
and
of my death were greatly exaggerated.
Maybe it wasn't just his arm. He was targeting Casey Hayward from the first drive on.
Absolutely.
Even before Shields and everyone was hurt. I mean, he saw something in game film, something he was going to take advantage of, and he really had that. And the funny thing is, you know, people were screaming on Twitter, you know, bench him, bench Hayward, and you're like, but there's no one else on the bench. There's no one else to play.
Well,
so, I mean,
you got Dimitri Goodson. You want to bring him in? You know,
exactly.
I mean, he was forced to come in and play dime for 10 snaps or so. But that was it. You had no one else.
So you're just sitting there with basically Capers just rearranging, hopefully, where you're going to put these guys on the field and trying to find something that's going to work. It's hard to fire Capers when he doesn't have any, at that point, you know, two of his probably two of his best players, his best secondary players, are out. And you have a guy like Peyton Manning who can dissect you when he has done his film study and knows where your weaknesses are.
Yeah, and to me, just the early success that they had with that just set the tone for them the entire game. I think that just gave them the confidence to go forward in that game and just continue taking it to the Packers, where if the Packers had knocked down a couple of passes, had defended them a little bit better, then you've got that doubt in Manning's mind, and then he starts thinking, all right, well, we're gonna go through this again like I've been going all through all season. So I give Hayward a good portion of the blame for the way this game turned out.
Absolutely. And I think that goes back to your larger point too, Al, that offensively, Manning knew what he was doing. He had done his studies. They came out with the plan. They weren't getting to him. He got the ball out relatively quickly. Pass rush wasn't really a factor against Manning. But defensively, you got to talk to me about this. The formula that they had to completely change, I think, almost the essence of what the Packer offense it is. You know, keeping Aaron Rodgers in the pocket. You saw him left and right trying to move and use his feet and use his legs. He wasn't able to do it. Not that Rodgers is a bad pocket passer, but if he can't move and his receivers are jogging their routes and Eddie Lacy is being, the fat Eddie Lacy beginning with the F and not the PH, it's a long day. So what did the Broncos do?
What do they do or what did they do?
What did they do? Explain just
okay.
What they did.
Sure. I mean, what they did was a pretty simple formula. It's something that Seattle did in the first game last season. What they did was they played predominantly with a single high safety. They had one safety in the box to help with the running game, and he did a really good job, between their linebackers and that extra safety taking care of the running game. So you take that out of the equation. You've got three probably Pro Bowl caliber defensive backs, who can play man-to-man, just, all right, I got, it's just like the playground, I got him, and just blanket them all over the field. Now, when you play man like that, the danger is that you leave plenty of opportunity for a mobile quarterback to run, right? It happened to the Packers with Colin Kaepernick way back when he was actually a decent quarterback. He killed them when the Packers were in man coverage. And that's kind of what Rodgers does, If all his players are downfield, they're covered in man, and he's got nowhere to go, he looks to run. Well, he only got two runs the entire game, which is low for him. So they did a good job of keeping him from extending drives with his feet when everybody was covered. And basically, they just covered all aspects of the Packers' offense in those three, those one fell swoop. They covered all three things.
Yeah, and hopefully, well, you almost want to say hopefully this isn't a blueprint for other teams to follow, but reality is it was already a blueprint, as you said. Seattle had used the same idea in previous years. And
you need the personnel to do it, right?
Exactly.
You need defensive backs that can cover a guy all over the field. I mean, you're not going to do it with a bunch of average defensive backs, which is why every team can't do this, But a team like Denver, absolutely.
Which, once again, brings you a little bit of nervousness. We're going against the Panthers, and, from everything I've read, obviously they go a completely different scheme. They're 4-3. They don't have, the Von Millers or types of players that are really going to make the disruptions happen along the line. So you got to think that Rodgers is going to have at least, I don't know how you can have less success against the Panthers than he did against the Broncos. But once again, it just makes you nervous that, hey, if the Packers are playing average competition, we're playing we're beating those teams we're supposed to beat, but that fear is you get into the playoffs and you start playing elite teams with a lot on the lines, and there is this formula that can work against Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I cannot argue with that.
Well, that's good. Hey, one last thing before we get to our guest here. I thought this was interesting. really studied that 2006 draft pretty hard there. And that was 2006-2007 when the Packers had that fifth pick overall. And we selected A.J. Hawk. And I was a major proponent for picking Hawk. And there's a lot of people saying we should have picked Vernon Davis.
Your fault.
Yep. Number six. He went. We could have had Vernon Davis. And, of course, he spent his first couple years being pretty much a bust. And he's had a bit of a revival. Obviously, when Kaepernick was hot, he did pretty well there for a couple of years. But he's become expendable. You know, obviously, throughout all of the hype of, hey, will the Packers trade for J.J. Watt? Because that's going to happen. there was the thought we could have actually had Vernon Davis. And, you know, we're thinking, he's not getting the time, he's a little bit older, et cetera, et cetera. Looking at the deal the Broncos got, do you think the Packers should have swung and maybe offered a fifth-round pick for him?
Well, I would have. I certainly would have taken a one-year rental, you know. I mean, there comes a point when you have to see what you're seriously missing on your team, and if there was a way to get a good player and fill that need without a huge payment required, and you know, a fifth round or 2 sixth rounds, whatever would have taken to do it, I certainly would have rolled the dice. But we know Ted Thompson doesn't roll the dice the same way.
But you know, if you're only having to give up a sixth round pick, that's not a real big roll of the dice. That's kind of that's almost a gift. That's almost a gift
for
him.
For him it is, because he values those sixth round picks, you know. You know the way he loves to pick up those sleepers in the fifth and the sixth round, and
well, he does, but then you also gotta sit and think, you know, since JerMichael Finley, he's used many draft picks, some higher than sixth round picks, on tight ends. Richard Rodgers, Andrew Corliss, a couple mm-hmm. other guys I can't even remember. And they've not turned out to be as talented as JerMichael Finley was. And I think that has been a big part that's missing from this offense, especially with Jordy Nelson out. Vernon Davis could have actually brought that whole dimension back to this team, and it could have made a difference. So you know, it's almost the Broncos with that nice win, the rich get richer. And boy, I'd sure be nervous facing them in the final game of the season.
The Broncos, who used multiple tight ends and killed the Packers with multiple tight ends all game, Micah Hyde especially took a beating there, go out and the next day trade to Vernon Davis. Okay.
Meanwhile, well, at least we dodged a bullet there. At least they waited till after we played them.
That's right. Otherwise, it would have been 39-10 final, whatever.
I'm going to get your thoughts here just on this, because it kind of came up where Mike Daniels was given a list this week of the Packers' unrestricted free agents. And there's quite a number. And it's interesting because you can have this list of players and you say, oh, they're good. Oh, that's okay. We kind of can prioritize. But then all of a sudden you get into a season and suddenly you're going 6-0 and you're riding the wave, and suddenly players – obviously supply and demand, and their value goes up. So the Packers have a number of players, and just throwing out a couple names, Mike Daniels, James Jones, B.J. Raji, Nick Perry, and of course your favorite, Mason Crosby. The Packers only $10.5 million under the cap this season, so not a lot of room for this. Who do you prioritize, Jersey?
For me, you got to go with the defensive line, because those are the guys that are hardest to replace if you've got a talented defensive lineman. You know, problem is, a guy like Mike Daniels is going to want big money. Now, the Packers kind of rolled the dice this year. Rather than try to extend him early, they said, well, let's let the season play out and then we'll negotiate after that. And I think they were rolling the dice in hope that he didn't have an absolute outstanding season and they wouldn't have to pay him $8-10 million a year. I think so far that the strategy is working, because while Daniels is a solid player, I don't think he's really stood out in every game. He's had one or two really, really strong games, but other games where you would think he could have done a little bit more. Now, having said that, you've got the counterpart, B.J. Raji, who we all know his travails through the years and disappointments, former very high first-round pick. And this year, started out the season playing totally on fire until he got injured and came back this first week from the injury, and you could tell he just wasn't the same player yet. But those, to me, if we're looking at the list, are probably the two guys that you've got to prioritize, would be Raji and Daniels. Now, looking at other people on that list, Mason Crosby, he's currently making $3.5 million. got to bring him back, obviously. Even I would say that. Obviously, he's turned things around. He's now become the type of kicker that we want him to be. I'm not sure what the going rate for top kickers is nowadays, but
almost
you know,
to defy
million.
You, he's become a top kicker.
I'm glad. It's all
almost
I asked
to defy
for
you.
The beginning. That's all
right
I
when
I
we
asked
had to spend too
beginning.
Much money to keep him. Yeah, then he's going to kick well and prove you wrong.
Hey, that's all I wanted. That was my only complaint. Just be a solid NFL kicker that we can count on. And that's what he's done the last 2 years. So kudos to him. I think, you know, you said only $10 million under the cap, but there's plenty of places they can cut here to free up money. Mike Neal making $4 million. Sorry, Mike. Don't think so.
Right.
Nick Perry making $2.5 million. Sorry, Nick. You had your shot. Don't think so. You know, so you can free up a bunch of money there. LaTroy Guyon, $2.5 million. Don't think so. So I think he's gone.
Just a little bit of a black cloud over this guy, too.
Yeah, yeah. And then that factors into
you got to wonder
absolutely.
That whole Packer people thing coming back to haunt you a little bit,
well,
I suppose.
Yeah, that factors into it. The interesting one is James Jones, you know. He's making the minimum. I think the Packers are only on the hook for $585,000 this season. That'd be real interesting to see what he's going to command next year. You know, two-year deal at $1.5 million, would that be enough to do it? Would that do it? Would that keep him? I don't know. But I think the Packers would try.
I think they will. You know, they've got two pretty darn expensive receivers right now, and I think they do look at Davante Adams as being a receiver of the future. The thought is James Jones was brought in as an emergency. You know, he's a DeAndre Rison this year, you know, to kind of come in. And is there a real commitment to him after this point? I don't know. Certainly not if he's too expensive. But you're hoping Jordy Nelson's back next year, and that's going to be, you know,
sure.
how things are going to work out. So, all right.
Interesting one is did you
oh,
want to
going,
try
sir.
Again?
No, I'm going to try again. You just keep talking.
Okay. Another interesting one is Casey Hayward, currently making $1 million a year. What do you do with Casey Hayward? Are they that convinced about Dimitri Goodson and Darius Gunter, who we haven't seen in any action, but was the poster boy for Mr. August, having a great camp? Do we hang up the spikes on Casey Hayward and say, go find something better, like, you know, like we did with Devon House? I have a feeling we might. I have a feeling they might have to do that. Other names on the list. James Starks, currently making $1.84 million. I think from what we've seen of Lacey, there's no way they would trust him enough to be the guy. So I think they definitely want to keep this two-person, the two running back options open. So Starks, I think they find a way to bring him back. Andrew Quarles, well, unless they're drafting a tight end in the first round next year, they've got to keep the guys they have. So I think Quarles needs to stay. Don Barclay, $1.5 million. I'd have to say he's probably gone. They've got some good backup offensive line options now. Scott Tolzien, $1.2 million. Really depends more on Brett Hundley than Scott Tolzien. If they think Hundley is ready to take over their number two spot, then no reason to spend that money on Tolzien. You've got Brett Good making just short of $1 million. They're going to keep him. You know, guy never makes a mistake, and that's all you want out of that position.
Mm-hmm.
And fan favorite, John Kuhn, $635,000. You know, he's been taking less and less every year. Is this the final year for John Kuhn?
I think they're going to ask Kuhn to pay the Packers for him to play, and he'll do it just so he can keep hearing himself.
Give him a job in the organization somewhere. You know,
very, very possible. Very, very possible.
Yeah, I think this might be the end for him on the field, but I think they would definitely look to keep him off the field. He's such a fan favorite, something in public relations, you know, whatever. I think that's everybody on our list of free agents, right? Did
that
I hit everyone?
That'd be about it. What did you say about James Starks?
I said Starks, you got to keep him. I said there's there's no way they trust Lacey enough, you know, after what they've seen this year and the whole weight issue and the disappointing play.
they want to have two guys that they can, you know, rotate in and out as needed. And if one is going bad, they want a second. They want a second option. So Starks has got to come back.
All right. Hey, I got some good news for you.
Yes.
Wes Hotkowitz will be joining us here live in just a few seconds.
Awesome.
Yes. Wes Hotkowitz, you may know him from PackersNews.com. Just watched a great webcast from him today. I don't know if you haven't seen it. It's over at Packers News, but it's Three Guys Talk Packers. Have you seen those yet, Jersey?
I haven't seen. I saw the ones he was doing with Ryan Wood. I haven't checked that one out yet, but I certainly will.
It was with Ryan Wood and Pete Doherty.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, it's pretty entertaining. Pretty entertaining. So, and I think he's with us live. So let's head her right on over.
By all means.
Cheesehead Radio special guest.
I'm hoping this is Wes Hotkowitz. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. This is Wes Hotkowitz, fortunately.
This is Wes Hotkowitz.
All right. Hey, Wes.
Yeah, sorry, guys. You know, I thought I switched over my number like last year, and I thought I pretty much had everybody switched over the new one, and I guess I judged this one very wrong, so I apologize.
Okay. Well, someone has your number now, and I left them a lot of rude messages, so I hopefully they hopefully they aren't too upset with
and
me.
He can be rude.
Let me tell you. Good. I was just watching three Guys Talk Packers. What a great show!
Yeah, thanks, man.
And I love watching you play the role of kind of the middleman, trying to keep things going between those two. Is that difficult?
Yeah. With Pete and Ryan, I mean, you can't. They're both great guys, but I mean, you couldn't find two people who are more dissimilar in terms of just, you know, for everything from just their outlook on life to the point in which they're out of their careers. They're very big two polar opposites. So it's a lot of fun. And yeah, we switched it up over the years. We did the Insiders for a bit. We switched it to the Game Day Live show for a few years. And now we're going with this. So either we're continuing to reinvent ourselves or we just can't settle on something. I don't know. It's probably one or the other.
I just want you to know that both Pete and Ryan have gotten together. They had a meeting, and they decided that they're no longer going to do the show with you because they don't think it was fairly moderated.
I don't blame them. So,
yeah, you know, they can't handle that. Well, you know how that goes. Also, I just got to say, Wes and Jersey Al, who's a little bit slightly behind the times, I really enjoyed watching your Periscope before the game. That was really cool. You and Pete Doherty doing that.
I've had a lot of fun with that. Yeah, Pete, I'm trying to call it the at Pete Doherty show, and he won't have it. he keeps saying, no, it has to be like the Wes and Pete show. I'm like, no. This is like where you have the Mike McCarthy show. It's not the Mike McCarthy and Lance Allen show. It's just the Mike McCarthy show.
Sure.
But Pete's not going with that. So we're still kind of figuring out what the name's going to be. We don't really have one. But, yeah, that was one of the things when we stopped doing the Game Day Live show. We still wanted to do something before the game. And to be quite honest with you, I think this works out better because it obviously doesn't go to our website anymore. It just goes to the Periscope app and Twitter. But the fact that we can interact with people now and answer questions if people have them, I think that's been the most fun for both of us. And yeah, sometimes crazy stuff happens too, like some random dude who watches it, you know, happens to be in Denver and jumps on with us for a little bit. I mean, that stuff is cool and
it is.
It's what makes it fun. So it makes you realize that you're not just talking to a camera. There's actually people watching it. So that makes it pretty sweet.
Yeah, I think Periscope's going to be, I don't know if it'll be the next big thing, but it sure is a nice way to reach out to fans and such. So, yeah, keep it up. You're inspiring me. I actually did a Periscope for the show tonight, and it was nowhere near as good as yours.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but, I mean, that is the cool thing about it, though. I mean, I didn't realize the power of it until I was actually helping out our preps writer, Andrew Picard. We were at State Track and Field in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and I was on the Mississippi River, and I just turned it on, and we started doing the pseudo-Packers/Green Bay preps chat, and there was, like, 70 people watching. I was like, oh, my God,
yep.
You know, like, I didn't realize that it can go out that far, but I'm sure if Wildy did it, he'd probably have, like, 1,000, but I'll take my 70.
Yeah, I had 4. But anyway. All right, Wes, let me shoot some questions at you here, okay? You all set?
Hit me. I'm ready to go.
You had a great article today with Micah Hyde and his frankness, his willingness to be frank about the Packers' performance, and I think he used the word sucked It sure looks like players are going through the motions even to start the game. It just seems like you keep hearing this from Hyde, Randall Cobb, and the Packers' official website. We're all blaming ourselves. The blame is pointed at us. It's all on us. Is this your impression you're getting, that there's a lot of self-blame, there's no finger-pointing elsewhere, and how do you see that changing through this week going into this Carolina game?
Well, it's a great question. I think the most disappointing thing about, at least from the Packers' perspective, about these last two games is they felt like they did take a corner. When you look at them athletically, they are a much better team. I know we've been talking about this defense for as long as I've been on the beat. I wasn't here in 2009, 2010 covering the Packers. The only thing I've seen so far is what they basically put on the table. My boss is calling me right now. He's going to have to wait. But they had years where it was kind of light. And now it seems like they really have talent, and they have guys that should be able to step up. The one thing that probably hurt them is Dom Capers and Joe Witt both acknowledged. It sounds like the game plan going into Denver was that Casey Hayward was going to play almost exclusively in the slot. But
right.
Then Demaryius Randall rolls his ankle during practice, so they're not sure what they're going to get out of him. And then Sam Shields ends up getting hurt in the second drive, I think it was. And then they lose Quentin Rollins. So suddenly all that gets thrown up in the air. And the Packers did very poorly against Denver for a lot more reasons than just that. But it seems like every time they take two steps forward, it ends up being another two steps back, and they're right where they started. That's why I think this game's going to be really important against Carolina on Sunday, because what team is this? Is this a team that can be a top 10, top 15 defense, or is this going to be the same Packers defense we've seen for what was 2.5 years up until that second half surge they had? That's what I'm interested to see, and I think it's going to be a testament to them if they can bounce back from this, because that is pretty gut-wrenching to be as far ahead as they were and then give up over 1,000 yards in the last two games.
Yes. All right, thanks.
Okay, Wes. I was watching Packers transplant last night, and Aaron Nagler was talking about something pretty interesting, I thought. It seems that during McCarthy's Wednesday press conference, ESPN Wisconsin's Bill Johnson asked McCarthy a question he didn't like very much. Now, later on, and wouldn't answer, right? So the interesting part is later on the website, when they put the video of the press conference up on the website for people to watch, that question was edited out. And then
further
later on, they actually must have rethought the decision and put it back in. So they're kind of all over the place. Now, my question to you is, as a credentialed Packers media member, how do you handle that fine line when the team tries to influence and or manipulate your coverage of the team?
Yeah, that's the one thing. I obviously was made aware of that just like you said, where I think, I don't know who it was, if it was Nagler or whoever tweeted about it that they had put that up. I didn't know they put up the original one then again, though. But I will say this, if you're going to – and this is by the Packers, it's their house rules. We're on their time. It's their locker room. And if it gets bad, obviously there's the PFWA and things you can do of that sort. But for the most part, we're always working around their schedule. If you are going to live stream the news conference, though, I think you should leave it in its entirety, because that is what it's being broadcast to everybody. And those are mostly, with a couple exceptions, mostly the questions of all credentialed media do not work for the team. So for that reason, I do believe it probably should just stay up no matter what. I don't know where that decision came from to maybe change it and then put it back to the original one. That's something for the Packers to decide. But I definitely am in favor. If Mike Crowther doesn't want to answer a question, that's definitely his prerogative. But I think I would leave it up in its unaltered form. But that was funny because, Bill Johnson, I give Bill a lot of credit. He comes in once a week, and he usually has that one doozy of a question that ends up hitting home for people. So He does. He likes to rile it up a little bit, and he has some good points. And I thought even today that created kind of a narrative here of, okay, maybe it's not just the receivers. Maybe there is something to this, too, with Aaron Rodgers needing to take more chances. And as Alex Van Pelt talked about today when we met with the assistant coaches, they agree. He agrees. There are going to be times where you got to take more chances. But it's a very fine line, because as soon as he forces a pass and it gets intercepted, then suddenly the question is, well, why did he throw that? So hindsight's always going to be 20/20. But I do believe that in my own thoughts and mind, whatever that's worth, that it's definitely worth it right now, because when you only have 77 passing yards, I think you got to do something to get this offense going.
Agreed.
All right. So, Wes, I would say this offense going into this season had to be considered probably on paper one of the best offenses of all time. I mean, we're talking about this offensive line being one of the best the Packers have had probably since the early 2000s. It's had trouble opening holes. We've got Randall Cobb. We've got Devontae Adams. We've got Jeff Janis, for cripe's sake. They're not getting open. Eddie Lacy, he's fat. He's wonderful. He should be the greatest player. He's not running well. You got Aaron Rodgers being held in the pocket. Yet on Three Guys Talking Packers, Ryan Wood played the Jordy Nelson card. Is this one guy really that big of a cornerstone that all of these Pro Bowl caliber players just can't put it together?
You know what I keep going back to is that JerMichael Finley tweet after Nelson tore his ACL. Now, whatever you want to say in terms of what it meant or what he was alleging, but in terms of, hey, now we're going to find out how good Aaron Rodgers is, and I think he ended up changing it to, well, now Aaron Rodgers is going to show you how good he is. I thought early during the season you really saw the greatness of Aaron Rodgers in that he was able to sort of weather some of those injuries, whether it be Jordy Nelson out for the year or Randall Cobb dealing with the shoulder sprain, and then obviously losing Devontae Adams. But it seems to me, and I'm not saying that this is a direct correlation, but it seems to me once they were unable to no longer create explosive plays off free plays, that this offense started to stutter a little bit and kind of stumble. At least that's sort of been the correlation for me. And I really do believe that, you know, one of the reasons that the Packers were doing those free plays and, you know, kind of using them the way they did is because you can try to go for those big explosive plays without the deterrent of an interception. But it seems like since that's gone away, the Packers haven't been taking a lot of chances. And I do kind of go along with the line of thinking, and I know a lot of Packer fans, this has been a very convenient narrative to say, hey, they got to put Jeff Janis out there. Why isn't Jeff Janis playing? But now I, too, am probably of that same thinking of, I don't know what it could hurt to put Jeff Janis out there and just maybe try to take advantage of his speed. Because whatever's been happening the last two games now, which you can make an argument has really been the last four games, if you take away the defensive performances that kind of got them there, I think something's got to change for this Packers offense. And they need to find some way to get a spark. The confusing part about all this is it's been all across the board. Eddie Lacy's not running well. The receivers aren't getting open. Aaron Rodgers hasn't been able to kind of dissect defenses like he usually does. They're not getting enough production from the tight end. I think if you get one or two of those things working, this offense is back to clicking to what we are used to seeing. But when none of it's working, that's where you're going to see some of these sort of just kind of the stale sort of football we're seeing. This is a big game for the Packers. Personally, that's what I believe. It's just that right now they have a defense that is in trouble, and they're trying to find answers. And offensively, this is where the offense needs to start picking them up a little bit, and they're going to have to do it if they do it on Sunday against a pretty darn good Carolina Panthers defense.
All right, so, thanks.
Okay, Wes, before we move on to the Panthers, just one last question about last Sunday, and then we'll wrap that one up. I'm just curious how you would describe the reaction in the locker room, not to losing the game, but the manner in which they were dominated. Was there anger, shock, resignation, we'll get them next time? What was the overall attitude?
Yeah, I think definitely, I don't want to say anger, because it's not like we went in there and it was just guys ready to rip our heads off, but there was definitely this real, stronger than disappointment, maybe almost somewhat disbelief in how things went in that game and how inept, for lack of a better term, the offense was. No, the first thing, the first person I talked to in there was Corey Linsley. And, you know, Linsley is usually a very happy-go-lucky, gregarious guy. And he was still very extremely polite, but you could see there was almost sort of this defeated kind of disappointment that was over him. And, you know, TJ Lang, one of the big spokespeople in that locker room, he kind of summed it up the best in saying that, you know, the timing's off right now. And they need to find a way to get this thing right. But for the most part, I think there was a lot of dejection. And I think some guys this week, I think the receivers in particular were a little bit more, I don't want to use the word testy, but in terms of just,
well, that's a
I
good
think
word.
They, yeah, I mean, if you go look at some of the videos on Packers.com, I mean, it kind of explains it for itself, but
yeah.
I think that they're probably tired of hearing about this for a little bit, but until they actually break out of it, until they get that offense back to producing 300, 350 yards per game and 30 points, it's going to be something that follows them because it's been so commonplace for so many years. You go back and you look at Mike McCarthy. Every year, they've been a top 10 to top 12 offense, passing offense. They're 28th right now, 28th in pass offense. Never been that low this far into a season. Really never been that low at all. And until we find those answers, unfortunately, those are the questions that are going to keep coming up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they don't sound very happy answering the questions anymore this week, do they?
No, it was just, I think everybody was ready. There's still one more day of availability, but I think everybody's ready to get onto this Carolina game.
Exactly. Well, hey, speaking of which, this is my last question for you tonight, but the Green Bay Packers are in a position right now to prevent an NFC rival, obviously an undefeated one, from going undefeated for the first half of their season. Now, the Panthers are far from perfect. I think they have some really good players at a couple of key positions, but really they're scrappy. They're a scrappy team trying to make the best out of what they have. Maybe not dissimilar from the Packers 2010. Talk me through this psychologically. Are the Packers in a better position right now because they've gotten beaten, they're angry, and they have something to prove? Or does this undefeated team that has all this momentum going for it suddenly feel buoyed by seeing, the team that they've constantly been compared to and says, oh, you're not quite as good as the Packers? Well, they just got thumped. I mean, who's got the psychological advantage going into this game?
Yeah, there's two layers to this, and I wrote a story that'll be on our website later tonight about it. I actually think Cam Newton's a pretty good matchup for this defense, which is funny when you consider how bad the Packers were in 2012 and 13 against the read option. I actually think they're probably better conditioned for it now than playing a Peyton Manning or a Phillip Rivers. That's why I think there is something in this game that they could potentially find, something to sort of get them back to, where they were at and maybe to sort of stabilize things again. But from a mental perspective, it's going to take a lot because when you face back-to-back undefeated teams, one of whom, pretty clearly defeated you, there can be sort of a mental hurdle to get over in terms of, hey, okay, we're trying to make the playoffs and you're trying to be a number one seed. These are the teams you got to beat because as important as it was, as Mike McCarthy said, to get that 4-0 start and start the season on that fast start, well, the reason they wanted to do that is because they wanted to be the top seed in the NFC. And if they don't accomplish this now and being able to get past Carolina, now you're putting yourself again behind the eight ball. The loss to Denver, you can take it. A lot of teams are going to lose to Denver this year, specifically because of that defense. A lot of offense and passing games are going to be contained because of the Broncos' defense. But if you can't get past Carolina, now they're suddenly finding themselves back in that place that they were in 2012 and 2013 and 2014 with San Francisco and with Seattle and go back to 11 with the New York Giants where they're, again, the second team in the NFC. It's about getting back to the Super Bowl for these guys. And I think that's why there's a lot on both sides of this, that, hey, if you lose it, well, now suddenly you got to go back to the drawing board and try to beat up the NFC North to get back into the hunt. But if you win it, well, suddenly I think that the cards are kind of out there again for you. And Clay Matthews said it, even today, is that, no team really goes undefeated outside of a handful of cases. But the Packers now have an opportunity to rally back and show what they have because I think, as my colleague Pete Doherty said on numerous occasions, this is the deepest team they probably had, since that Super Bowl squad, at least since 2011, in terms of how well-rounded they are. And now they got to show that they can play up to that because there is a lot of expectations. And with this fan base, just naturally how it is, they want to get back to the Super Bowl, and they feel like they've been taking steps towards it. And now's the year to kind of cross that threshold.
Okay. Wes, I want to get back to the first thing you said in answering that question from CD about Cam Newton. The Packers obviously had a tremendous success against the Panthers last year at home. They were leading 38-3 at one point before the Panthers scored a couple of meaningless touchdowns. Now, the key to last year's game was getting out to an early lead, making the Panthers offense one-dimensional, basically forcing them to throw more than they want to. I think Capers' plan for the game will be to make Newton beat you throwing the ball. But the question is, can the offense pitch in and, score some touchdowns and make the Panthers have to play that game?
Yeah, and I actually asked Clay Matthews that today in terms of just what was the key, in that game and being able to kind of contain Newton. And he said it was that fast start. And that forced them out of that read option, run, drain clock sort of mentality. They had to start pushing the tempo then. And as you look, right now, as good as Cam Newton is, he's terrific. In terms of his size and what he brings to the table, he's the reason why that team is 7-0. But at the same time, he has the lowest passer completion percentage right now in the NFL at like 54% outside of Ryan Mallett, who's currently unemployed. And then you look over at it from the perspective of, you know, what the Packers can do sometimes when they don't allow offenses to gain in a rhythm. It seems like that's when the defense, at least under Capers, has had its biggest sort of challenges, is when offenses establish an early rhythm and kind of get things trending in their direction. If you can stop them early, yeah, they might give up some yards late. I'm sure everybody loves that, and it you know, frustrates people. But it's what's allowed this team to win games over the years, is getting off to these big first half starts. So, yeah, and Clay Matthews said it too. Whether or not, whatever the offense does regardless, the defense has to hold its ground early on, either to give the offense a chance or to be able to pull away. So that's going to be the biggest sort of barometer, I think, for this game, is how the Packers come out. Because as poorly as they played in that first quarter against Denver, you got to remember the Packers, I think, are still the highest scoring team in the first quarter in the NFL right now. So bad as that was, it shows you what they had done up until that point, and that's really probably the biggest reason that they were 6-0 going into Denver.
Okay, one last question for you, Wes, and then we'll let you get on with the rest of your evening. The Packers have struggled covering tight ends the last few games, Micah Hyde specifically. And now here comes offensive weapon Greg Olsen. By the way, I saw a play in high school. He went to the same high school as my kids went to here in New Jersey.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he was actually a tremendous defensive end more than anything else. He was a terror. Yeah,
yeah.
He was a terror in high school football. But in any case, with the Panthers' lack of top wide receiver talent, do they treat Olsen more like a receiver and possibly – or do the Packers treat Olsen more like a receiver and possibly double him when possible?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's probably very possible. Talking with and Pete Doherty will have a column coming out tonight too. We're talking with Joe Witt a little bit about the cornerback situation, and you know, Witt said regardless of what's going to happen here with Shields or Rollins, and now even that Morgan Burnett's back, Demarius Randall is going to have a role in this defense. Even if they're 100%, he's earned that playing time. I think that's probably, if Shields is back either this week or next, I'm guessing that pushes Casey Hayward back to the slot a little bit more, maybe pushes Micah Hyde to the dime role. But I think if you have Hayward there, that's probably his best position now that we've been able to see him on the outside a little bit. It seems like that's where he makes the most plays. I think if you can get him matched up with a Greg Olsen, I'm not sure if the Packers are going to have that luxury or not this Sunday, but I think if you get him matched up with some of those top-flight tight ends in this league, that could be a benefit for them in terms of what maybe he could do in terms of baiting a quarterback. If they can use multiple guys in that situation, I think that's probably where they're going to find their most success. To be quite honest with you, the more I watched that game, it almost made me wonder if maybe the Packers should have been operating more in a dime defense to get more of those defensive backs on the field. It seems like even with Matthews there, inside linebacker is still a pretty big liability. Maybe that is their strength, to use Quentin Rollins whenever he gets back from his neck issue now, or to get Micah Hyde, Casey Hayward, some sort of, you know, rotation of those guys involved. Because as poorly as I think Hyde has played sometimes against those tight ends, there's still value in him in that defense. He's probably their best defensive back, their best tackler as a defensive back. It's just about not allowing guys to make catches either. But I think if you get Shields back healthy, you have Randall on the outside, then that really opens up some possibilities and maybe can also help, you know, Casey Hayward be a little bit more impactful than what he'd been the first seven games so far this season.
All right. Okay.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have been listening to Weston Hotkowitz. He of PackersNews.com. You're doing WNFL, or you're doing The Fan now, aren't you? 105.7, is that correct?
Yes. Yep, I actually picked that up from Rob Demosky. When Rob left us to go to ESPN, he no longer could do their show, so then he suggested that I do it. So that's actually my third season now, I think, with those guys.
I just want you to remember that you started out with us doing radio.
I did. This was my first interview.
Yeah, we prepped you for this. So I want you to remember people.
You're taking credit, CT.
Yes, I am.
Honestly, God, though, I think this was the first in 12. I think this was the first time I ever really even talked about the Packers while I was on the beat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure.
No, we're always thrilled to have you because you are just a great interview. And, you know, it's been fun watching you grow from that, you know, first year kid. And you've really just become a real established beat guy, very well respected, doing great stuff with a lot of the multimedia. So we appreciate having you here. And all of our listeners, please give this guy a follow on Twitter at Wes Hod. And tune into Packers News. Great stuff over there.
Well, you guys got my cell phone number now, so hopefully next time we can I'll be there on time. So
that will text you every day and bug you now.
Yeah, there's some old lady down in Manitowoc going, "Who is this guy calling my phone?"
some poor woman who just got her phone like last week and is getting these bombardment of phone calls.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. West Hodgkiss,
all right,
ladies and
thanks
gentlemen.
A lot for
thank
me.
You so much. You
yep.
bet. Take
Have
care, man.
Have a good
man.
Night.
Too funny.
Always good Dude. Talking to Wes. Always a wealth of knowledge.
He is fantastic. Absolutely.
Yep.
All right. Well, we've gone a little bit long tonight, so I suppose we should get right to our Packer game predictions.
Cheesehead Radio. Packer game predictions.
So, a much bigger game maybe than we would have imagined. The Packers are going to Carolina. And it's going to be a big one. So what do you say, Jersey Al? You predicted a Packer victory last week, a low-scoring affair. You're right on the Packers being low-scoring. What do you say this week?
I think things are going to be finer in Carolina this time around. But, again, it's going to be a low-scoring game. I've got the Packers squeaking one out 19-17.
All right. And last week I predicted the Packers to win, but I picked a very high-scoring affair. I was correct on the Broncos score, not the Packers. This week
put our two scores together, we might have something there.
Exactly. It would have worked out. this week I'm also going to predict a Packer win, but I'm hoping and praying that this emotion and frustration and, I think as you said, Jersey Al, embarrassment – really generates that back against the wall feeling. You start seeing a team that's focused, and I think you're going to see Aaron Rodgers take over as the leader of this team again, where he's done that in some other times in the past with his big you see him really step up and that attitude wash over the team, and I think you're going to see that again, or at least I hope we are.
I hope you're right.
All right. You ready to close it out, sir? Did you want me to read it, or do you want to read it this week?
I'll let you do it this time.
I figured you'd say that.
And I didn't enjoy it.
Exactly, yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us tonight on Cheesehead Radio, and a huge thank you to Wes Hodgkiss for joining us. Be sure to head on over to PackersTalk.com to get all of our podcasts. Please follow Packers Talk Net on Twitter, and give a like to the Packers Talk Network page on Facebook. Cheesehead Radio and all Packers Talk podcasts are available on iTunes. Just Google Packers Talk iTunes and you'll find it. Be sure to subscribe, leave us a review if you can. You can also listen by using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite pod-catching app and search for Packers Talk. If you're on Facebook, please like our Packers Talk page and also look for the Packers Peeps group on Facebook. It's a private group, but if you request to be added and you listen to the show, you are in. Finally, make sure to support our sponsors, Mayfield Sports Marketing over at Mayfield Sport on Twitter, and Waukesha Sports Cards at Walk Sports. Jersey Al, we did it. We got through
this
one.
We did it. Just you and me.
You and Wes, eventually.
That's right.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us on Cheesehead Radio. We'll chat with you next week, hopefully after a Packer win. Until then, good night, and go Pack Go.
Good night, Packer Nation.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.